recorded.
Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, I can dig it.
Stop it. Right on.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah.
Time now. The Empowerment Hour, the hottest show on Saturday mornings in Jacksonville on Praise 107.9. And now, here's your host on the Empowerment Hour, Dr. Richard Danforth, president of the Jacksonville Urban League, Jarman Leitner, president of First Thursday, and the producer and host, W. Larry Williams, CEO of Anchor Multicultural Communications Company.
Good morning and welcome to the Empowerment Hour on Praise 107.9. I am Jarman Leitner, your co-host, along with Larry Williams and Dr. Richard Danford. And we're just excited once again to be here this morning to share with you, our listeners, happy Labor Day weekend. And we are encouraging all of you to be safe. Remember to mask up and social distance, but enjoy yourselves. How are you all doing, guys? Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Dr. Danford.
Hey, good morning, Jarman and Dr. Danford. Happy Friday, Saturday morning. So just so you guys know, this is pretty important. So don't hold us too at too guilty.
Switching back and forth sometimes. Right.
How are you doing, Doc?
I'm doing pretty good. Thank you all for the shout out last weekend. I traveled up to the mountains in Tennessee to spend some time with my mother-in-law, and in traveling down Interstate 75, I was amazed at the number of national cemeteries that we have in the South. As you know, the national cemeteries are for those veterans, and we have quite a few, certainly in the Jacksonville area. And with that, I want to send out condolences to the family of Army Lieutenant Colonel Robert Porter, retired veteran, airborne, spent time in Vietnam. And as important, he headed up the ROTC program over at Raines High School. So he had a major impact on the youth in this community, and particularly in the northwest side of town. So we'll miss you, Robert, and we wish condolences to your wife, Josephine.
Okay. Well, Doc, as you're talking about veterans and so forth, there's a report published Thursday that claimed President Donald Trump called dead American service members losers and suckers. And he went on to say, why should I go to that cemetery? It's filled with losers, you know. And then he went on to double down on it. On the same trip, he later referred to more than 1,800 Marines who lost their lives in the Battle of Belle Wood in France as suckers for getting killed.
Wow!
Come on, man! This is terrible.
Maybe it's fake news? I cannot imagine. I just don't believe that President of the United States would say something like that.
Really? With his track record, did he even say that?
Well, I know he has some issues with Senator John McCain, right. course, he was a prisoner of war, and I understood that he was a loser because he got captured. But that's right. another story. We're proud of all of our veterans. We
absolutely
respect them highly, and in particularly, it tells you how far we have to go in terms of recognizing the courage and the honor, the valor of our African-American veterans. And so as president of Urban League over here, I'm committed, with the time that I have here and going forward, that I will provide a permanent means for us to recognize our African-American veterans.
All right. Well, that's a good deal. And you know, we talk about the veterans and things, and I too salute the veterans and both those that are living and those that have gone, past. But I thought that was just a terrible thing for anyone to say, let alone the leader of the free world.
Yeah, of course, he did not go to the military. He had an opportunity to run from the draft. I didn't have that opportunity. I was drafted and had to go to Vietnam. But
you don't have to go to the military to have a compassion and sensitivity towards veterans and active military. So, I salute veterans as well. My father fought in Vietnam. So, we definitely need to give honor to those who have served. And we just, understand that Trump continues to just say whatever he wants to say. So we've heard him disrespect several people, whether it's military, whether it's a race. And we just have to hear what our leaders are saying and vote. If we want a change, we have to exercise our right to vote. Voting will be coming upon us soon. We're in the month of September. Early voting begins in October, guys. It's approaching. October 24th is early voting, and the general election day is November 3rd. So,
and we need to fill out our census. Yeah, we need to fill
out. Yes, and we could. And the census is still going on as well. So, do what you can do to make a change in our community, and we definitely need change in leadership.
Well, in another positive item in the news yesterday was the former New York City mayor and one-time Democratic candidate for president, Michael Bloomberg, announced a $100 million funding pledge, which will benefit four historically black medical schools. Now, that's
all right. $100 million to four
that's what I'm talking
black
about.
Medical schools.
Okay. That's what I'm talking about.
Resources that are shared.
This donation is designed to improve the health and wellness of black communities during this pandemic. And the billionaire also wants to ease the financial burdens that are plaguing black medical students. And, I have a niece that became a doctor a couple of years ago. Man, that's an expensive deal.
Yeah, one of those schools, Larry, the names of the schools
they'll be starting with Howard University, the Charles R. Drew University of Science and Medicine in Los Angeles, the Meharry Medical College in Nashville, Jarman, all right.
Right there across the street from Fisk.
Morehouse School of Medicine in Atlanta. So that, kudos to Michael Bloomberg. And, that's what we call action items, guys, not just talking about helping us and helping the schools and the communities. This is actually helping. And if we can get more people to, send more resources into our communities for schools and healthcare and black businesses, that would be, those are the things that we need to help in. We don't need any more talk about, we're going to research this, or we're going to have task forces and so forth. We need to, make sure that we get action items accomplished. So that was a great deal.
It is. And one of the phrases that just jumped out at me as you were saying what Michael Bloomberg did is ease the financial burden, because we know that African-American communities, we experience financial burdens, and those resources, again, are beneficial, especially for, like you said, Larry, schools, healthcare, and small businesses. Okay, so let's remember it's happy Labor Day weekend, and there is a heat advisory in effect that has been reported this weekend. So again, not only with the social distancing and being safe, but just be safe and stay hydrated. Nothing strenuous this weekend because, Larry, they're reporting it could reach 112 here on this coast. On
oh, so I should have to mow my lawn, okay?
You should. I don't know.
I wouldn't be rebuilding my fence this weekend, huh?
Well, we're gonna continue after our first music break. We will have a special guest joining us later on in the show. We're going to talk about what some charter schools are doing during this COVID pandemic and how they are being innovative and creative to help their students. This is the Empowerment Hour on Praise 107.9, and we'll be back.
The new Praise 107.9, the ultimate gospel experience.
Hey, how are you now? I'm closing chapters, I'm turning pages, glory to glory, and from faith to faith. I'm moving on, I'm moving on, I'm moving on. I'm getting older, so I'll keep it straight. It hurts to let go, but it hurts more to stay. I'm moving on, I'm moving on, hey, I'm moving on. Hey, 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 I know my real. Your failures and forgive yourself. I'm moving on.
I'm moving on.
Hey,
I'm good.
Hey,
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 hey, hey.
I know my review.
Party. I pride myself on bringing light to your parties. Holy Ghost, you rectify the mind, I'm naughty. Without you, it's powder, I'm a dry land. Without your power, I'm a nightmare. Nothing but trouble, saying bye, man. Can't have too much on a diamond. My brother called me, I could call me. Told me we moving, I'm in God's hand. Yeah. Told me we moving, I'm in God's hand.
Bring my moving truck in.
Gotta go.
I'm moving.
Tell me we're moving. I'm in God's hand.
I'm moving.
Tell me we're moving. I'm in God's hand. Tell me we're moving. I'm in God's hand.
Welcome back to the Empowerment Hour on Praise 107.9. I am Jarmin Leitner, Harvest Mental Health Services, your co-host, along with Dr. Richard Danford of the Jacksonville Urban League and Larry Williams of the Anchor Group. And guys, we're going to get into a couple of topics here that we want to continue to share with our listeners, and that's what's going on with COVID-19, the updates surrounding that, as well as what's going on in the justice system. I mean, again, we continue to see social injustices and the fight for change in that area. But Larry, what's going on with COVID-19 right now?
I have no idea, Jarmin, because they're hiding the information from us.
They're hiding the information?
They hide the information. But on the serious side, you know, the numbers are right around averaging out daily about 3,000 positive tests statewide, which is down from about 5,000 earlier in the summer. And you know, this Labor Day weekend, guys, this is something that you know, we need to pay particular attention to in making sure that we're remaining safe. Mask up if you're going out, you know, and do the things that are necessary to keep you safe and out of COVID's way, because it will jump on you, and it has no regards to race, color, or creed. COVID is definitely an equal opportunity pandemic.
Well, Larry, you mentioned an equal opportunity disease. What about murder and homicides here in Jacksonville? We're up to 124 homicides in after 8 months, and so we're on a track record. If we continue, we're gonna blow it out of the water in terms of the numbers of folk that are being shot around Jacksonville.
Well,
and I just don't get it. I you know, we hear so much about the COVID deaths, but the shooting deaths just continue. And I thought we had a handle on that with all of the things that we're doing around community policing. And now we're showing the body cam footage, and we got the shot spotter, and we've got the cure violence, and they've gotten another amount of quite a bit of money for this coming year to expand that cure violence. So apparently, I guess the city is going to depend on that program to help eliminate or stop the murders that take place in this, just ravaging certain parts of our community.
Well, Doc, the thing with that, and it's not just Jacksonville, murders are up all over the country, and including Seattle. Everyone is talking about the spike in violence, and it's real, okay. But you know, if you look at, people have a lot more time on their hands, you know, when and folks aren't working and doing, you know, things they normally do, they tend to do things that are you know, out of character sometimes. But you're right in the fact that you know, we do need to get a hold of this violence, and what you said created a thought in my mind. I'm saying we just allocated, we're getting ready to allocate $350 million more dollars to the sheriff's office. And you know, as you said, all of these programs that they've implemented, it seems that the crime and violence is going up instead of coming down.
Well, I see, I was going to say, Dr. Danford and Larry, I do see that there's a new policy that has been approved by the state attorney's office for Duval County to now release the footage from police shootings within 30 days of that shooting, unless the state believes that it will hinder the case.
So, yeah.
Right. Unless it will hinder. And so that's something new that could possibly help solve some of the shootings that have been wrong. Just a lot of wrongful deaths that have happened. So hopefully we're making some progress in that area.
Yeah, and I hope so too, Jarmin. But, you know, my lived experience says it's not. So we'll have to see.
We need to stay optimistic. Of course, I'm serving on the city council crime task force, and you know, I guess we're tasked in helping to figure out how we can help reduce the crime in our community.
So you're the one that's responsible for this uptick in crime, then, huh?
Well, I guess we all have to take some responsibility if we don't do something about it.
So if I'm sitting on a
committee and we're not doing anything about what we're supposed to doing something about, right?
Well, I would agree with the new body camera policy as well, because it has shed light on the shooting of two people, and they were known to have mental illnesses. And so, I mean, if we can take that information and better prepare the police department in order, you know, to deal with mental illness, to address those situations separately from someone who is not mentally ill, then it could help. But just the information alone is not enough. We have to go beyond knowledge and begin to apply and make changes.
So, John, when the police supposed to, before they shoot you, they're supposed to say, are you mentally ill?
No. They're supposed to receive training that helps them to identify when there is a mental illness involved. I mean, you know, I don't know what all of that is, but again, maybe the task force can bring that up and see how they can come up with some ways and a process for it.
Well, John, they've already implemented that in Seattle, and how they're getting ready to implement it. How this program is designed to work is that they will have, that the 911 calls are the ones that send the police to whatever call that's made. So when that call comes in to the dispatcher is trained to ask certain questions and determine whether this particular call needs a mental health person along with the police person or not. And that's how they are addressing it.
Well, see, there are programs and trainings that are underway in other parts of the United States. So we just have to look at what's being done, what is having success, and maybe adopt that so that we can see some of those shootings decrease.
You all have a new sheriff down there in Clay County, Jama. Jama.
I guess. Do you know her, Dr. Danford?
No, I don't know her. No, there's a female sheriff now. Okay,
there's a female sheriff. And we have the potential to have an African American female vice president. So again, we're encouraging our listeners to vote this year. Remember, we are pushing voting and completing the census. It is Labor Day weekend. Again, have a heat advisory in effect. So everyone, remember to be safe. We are getting ready to take our next music break. We want to remind our listeners of the email address to reach out to us for any comments or questions. And we certainly want to know our African-American owned small businesses that are open. We would like to know what your services are and products, and we can share that on the air. That email address is jacksempowermenthour@gmail.com. That's jacksempowermenthour@gmail.com. This is the Empowerment Hour. Go ahead, Larry.
And don't forget our special guest that's coming up in the next segment.
Yes, and we have our special guest that's coming up in the next segment, Simone Green, and she's going to talk to you a little bit about a public charter school and what they are doing to support their students during this
private
time.
Charter school.
Private charter school. Okay, sorry. Private charter school.
No, it's not a private. Well,
it's not.
Public
no.
or private.
Don't mess up what I'm saying, Dr. Danford. We'll be back. We'll be back after this music break. This is the Empowerment Hour on Praise 107.9.
The ultimate gospel experience. The new Praise 107.9.
The new Praise 107.9.
The question is, When you're standing at a crossroads,
when you're standing at a crossroads,
what do you do?
What do you do?
Real sweet, when a fork is in the road.
When a fork is in the road, what do you do?
When the world is on your shoulders.
When the world is on your shoulders, what do you do?
When your back is up against the wall.
When your back is up against the wall.
Come on.
What do you do?
What do you do?
What do you do?
You hold on.
You hold on.
And keep the faith.
And keep the faith.
Tell somebody on your row, say,
keep the faith.
Come on. Tell somebody sitting around you, keep the faith.
Keep the faith.
Come on, encourage somebody else, keep the faith.
Keep the faith.
Come on, where do you look? When there's nowhere else to look.
When there's nowhere else to look.
Where do you turn?
Where do you turn?
When there's nowhere else to turn.
When there's nowhere else to turn.
Where do you go?
Where do you go?
When there's nowhere else to go.
When there's nowhere else to go.
What do you do?
What do you do?
When there's nothing else to do.
When there's nothing else to do.
You gotta remember, you're in the master's hand.
In the master's hand.
And the master has a plan.
And the master has a plan.
So hold on.
Hold on.
Hold on.
Hold on.
And keep the faith.
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 We are back here on the Empowerment Keep Hour the faith. On Praise 107.9. I'm Jarmin Leitner, along with my co-hosts, Larry Williams and Dr. Richard Danford. And we have a special guest joining us this segment. We have Simone Green of Friendship Public Charter School in the D.C. area. Good morning, Simone. We thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, we wanted to just jump right in because, you know, during this time, a lot of schools are having challenges with, you know, reopening and making sure that learning is still being effective and that people, families are safe. And we understand that Friendship Public Charter School are doing some innovative things, or they have some creative ways in order to continue to meet the needs of the students and families. So before we get into that, tell us when Friendship Public Charter School was founded.
Sure. So back in 1996, the District of Columbia passed the D.C. Reform Act, allowing for the creation of public charter schools. As a result, we were founded by founder and chairman Donald L. Hentz in 1997. He founded it because he wanted to fulfill a need in our communities, which is equity and quality education. Therefore, he began planning the first campus. Our first camp, multi-campus, actually opened in 1998 with 1,200 elementary school students. And we expanded to middle school in 1999 with 724 students. And our first high school was opened in 2000 with 423 students. And now we have expanded to 16 campuses, including online, for students pre-K 3 to 12. And because of our rigorous curriculum, instruction, and commitment to our scholars, we are DC's top-ranked charter school system, where we have achieved Tier 1 status in elementary and middle schools.
Wow, Tier 1, huh?
Yes, well, congratulations on that. And is this a minority-owned public charter school?
It is African-American owned and managed. And we do have a diversity of staff from all walks of life. But our president and, our chief executive officer is an African-American female. Our chiefs at Friendship Public Charter School are very diverse with African-Americans, largely African-American women.
Wow. That's wonderful. So Simone, tell us a little bit about how you all have developed an innovative and creative way to reopen. I understand that your reopening date was August 31st.
Yes.
And so what does that layout look like for families in the DC area?
So we opened August 31st virtually. We have been actually doing virtual learning since March the 20th. And so as a result, we had summer breaks. We started virtual learning again and distant learning August the 31st. That includes students who have, they stay at home and parents are with them with their equipment that they need to work virtually online. However, we do understand that there are parents of our scholars that are essential workers. And one of the things that we did, as always, to meet that need is we created learning hubs. And these learning hubs are for families that find it impossible to balance work and financial demands with school at home. And so we have created these in-person learning hub, learning pod options that that are stationed at 5 of our campuses. They are self-contained pods led by our instructional staff with no more than 4 to 9 students in each pod. And of course, each pod are under the District of Columbia's strict adherence to public health and safety requirements. Our scholars and our learning pod staff, they're provided breakfast, lunch, and a snack. In the event that a essential worker has to work overtime, we do have aftercare as well. And it's still that provides fun and engaging activities for our scholars.
Okay, so Simone, you know, as we talk about charter schools and this friendship started back in 1996 and it's still getting better every day. I know in certain parts of the country, there are many African-American formed charter schools that haven't had that type of success. Are your success dependent particularly on the funding from the government, or do you have other means of supporting your resources supporting the school?
Sure. As a 501c3 charter management organization, we receive funding for the government, private donations, charitable contributions, as well as corporate funding and private and government grants. In the District of Columbia specifically, they have are very adamant to meet the need of for those students who are considered at risk to have equity in education equity in education to make sure that we are able, our students are able to have the same resources as our the students who come from affluent areas. And so funding has always been available since the DC Reform Act has been passed to offer these Title I, if you will, if you want to get, want to be specific, Title I fundings based on the needs of each campus. That is, we have a high percentage of students who come from low-income communities of working families or working families, single-parent families that may not be able to receive the same resources traditionally as affluent communities. We also receive funding. That funding also covers homeless students or migrant students. Migrant students are those families that are in transition. They go from home to home or go from place to place. Of course, you have your free lunch programs and your special education. And so what we do is all making sure that the District of Columbia is making sure, and the federal government has been adamant in making sure that these grants and funding are available, again, to provide the equity in education in these communities that are considered at risk or low income.
Okay, so
go ahead.
So for those communities that are at risk, we also see challenges with the technology. How is Friendship Public Charter School addressing those challenges for virtual students?
So we recognize that many families did not have the technology back in March to support the needs for virtual learning and distant learning equipment. So we were able to identify these families and work with these families to supply them with these resources. And we have provided Chromebooks and internet hotspots. And we work with these families on a continual basis to provide those things. If they already had something and something had happened where they were not able to provide, if they didn't have a desktop at home or a laptop, we will work with these families and make sure that they are able to receive something so that they can have they can continue their children's learning matriculation.
Okay. Well, I just think that's very, very interesting and innovative to utilize five of your campuses. So that's 5 out of 16 campuses that you all set aside and established as learning hubs based on the needs of the essential families in the area. And so within that, you all are practicing social distancing with these learning pods of 4 to 9 students per classroom, but each classroom in the hallway isn't filled up with students. You all are still separating those students and still implementing those guidelines. Now, do students still receive, you know, meals, breakfast, snack, lunch? They do still receive that as well.
All the students receive breakfast, lunch, and a snack. If they have to stay over that time period, they will also receive another meal during aftercare.
Okay, so Simone, do they? What about the kids that are? What about the kids that are virtual? That are Title I kids? Do they receive free meals as well?
Yes. So there's a designated days that parents can come to certain locations, certain campuses throughout our system that they can pick up breakfast, lunch, and a snack for their child.
Okay. That's awesome. So, Simone, if you want to hang on to the next segment, we'd love to have you. We're going to be talking with our education contributor, Daryl Willie, who's a member of the Duval County School Board.
All right. Well, Simone, again, we thank you. And Simone of Friendship Public Charter School in the D.C. area. We just encourage you to continue to tune in. This is the Empowerment Hour on Praise 107.9, and we'll be back.
The new Praise 107.9, the ultimate gospel experience. The ultimate gospel experience.
I love you, oh Lord, my strength. 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 The Lord is my pillar and my fortress, my deliverer, my God, my rock. Lord is my pillar, my fortress, my deliverer, my God, my rock, in whom I take refuge. He is my shield. Tower. He's my high tower. Said I will call on the name of the Lord, who is worthy to be praised. Said I will call on the name of the Lord, who is worthy to be praised. I will call on the name of the Lord, who is
worthy to be
praised.
To be praised.
I will call
on the name of the Lord.
Praise 107.9. We are here with our next special guest, who is our education contributor. He's not foreign to this platform. He shares with us weekly, pretty much, since we have started opening the schools, and we've been wanting to get some updated information about what's going on in DCPS. So good morning again, Daryl Willie. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I love that I get called special when I come on the show, because some other shows, they don't call me special. So this is always great to be on the hour and be empowered. So I appreciate y'all having me always.
Right. Yeah, so we appreciate you being here and sharing information that can help empower our community, just letting them know what's going on with Duval County Public Schools. So how are we doing this week? How are we going with the virtual platform and the school being reopened?
Yeah, so this being the first full week, we're moving ahead. I think there was a lot of question marks in the beginning, a lot of sort of massaging and working through issues, everything from technology to PPE and those sorts of pieces, but it's evening out. I mean, over time we knew that would happen. We are, our biggest sort of situation right now is we're making sure students know that school is open. We probably have about 1,500 as we speak right now that we're still trying to make sure we're getting an accurate count for. And with multiple avenues for folks to attend school, it's even harder to sort of pinpoint where people are. So you got a virtual environment, you got a brick and mortar environment, you got a hybrid environment. There's some transitions. Some folks are choosing other options, whether it's homeschool or just keeping them at home. So if you're hearing my voice right now and you haven't, you know, registered for school or haven't shown up anywhere, at minimum, let someone know so we can be supportive. I mean, brains have to eat. Little brains have to eat even more. So I want to make sure our students are in school. But yeah, there's a lot of other things. I'm sure we can talk about a myriad of things, from testing to when we go full opening again, to how many cases we're seeing. So there's a lot of things, but I'll sort of stop there and let y'all pepper me with questions.
Well, I'll start with understand that the public schools, the Duval system, has not provided a dashboard identifying COVID cases yet. And when are you expecting that to be available? I know that it's a Florida Department of Health contingent in there somewhere, but folks need to know if people are testing positive and what schools they're in.
I agree. I totally agree. Yeah, we've gotten some, we got late notice that we couldn't post it, because our plan was to post it earlier on this week or this past week. So the plan now is we're going through some of the legal questions and making sure we're not violating any major rules. But hopefully that will come out this week. As you look into this week, it'll come out, because it is important. It's imperative that parents and students and even staff understand what's going on in the schools, because we want people to be able to make informed decisions. We're not seeing huge cases. We have seen some cases, and I'll be honest, we've seen some cases in our schools. We knew we were going to see cases in the schools, but they've been isolated. About 20 schools or so have seen some sort of case. Either somebody had it and reported that they knew, but there hasn't been any school shutdowns. It's been, all right, there's a case in this class. We do contact tracing, figure out who may have been affected, and then we move those folks to hybrid. And it's happening a lot in our elementary schools, which is a trend that we're seeing. And elementary, as you know, are the schools that are fully open, and some of the other ones are hybrid. We thought we would see more in the high school, middle school, because they congregate even after school, but we're actually seeing more in the elementary school.
Elementary students don't get COVID. That's what
So. Yeah, well, it's both. So it's some students who are contracted it, but also you have staff. But mostly it's been students but students go home, they interact with other people, but it's been contained. And if you think about that number of situations we're seeing, and 100,000 plus, that's just kids, not including staff. So you're up to about 120,000 people. There's no good number to say that you have, but it's not at the point now where it's raising tons of eyebrows.
Daryl, what about sports?
Yeah, sports are coming. So you're going to start to see some people are excited about football. So football is coming. So folks that are excited about that, Friday Night Lights is coming. So just be on the lookout for that. It will be a controlled environment. They are not going to allow everyone to come into the stadium. It's going to be about 30% capacity in those venues. So it's mostly family and staff that are going to be allowed in those venues to start.
So Daryl, are you all thinking about, I guess, the next 9 weeks as far as whether, you know, the reopening plans will continue to be all campuses open? You know, what are you all doing to assess that? I mean, are you still looking at the numbers, even though the COVID numbers aren't actually being reported? You know, there's not much transparency in that, and the testing is down. So how are you all adjusting to that and making decisions on whether to reopen?
Yeah, it's tough. We still have the council that we collaborate with. Dr. Green and her staff are doing a great job communicating. So even though there's no outside visible dashboard, trust me, the board, we send emails every day making sure that we're making the right decision. They're talking to the right people. And I think that's the big question. September 14th is the date where we were supposed to make a decision whether to open up fully for the programs that were hybrid. So those middle and high school would then go back full on September 14th. So we'll be discussing in a board member board meeting this week about just that. Like, do we need to open? You also, the big thing, the big sort of piece is Labor Day. We got Labor Day right in the middle of this. So usually after a major holiday, we saw it after July 4th, you see some spikes. And that was when school wasn't open. So we're crossing our fingers. I'm telling everybody once again, every time I'm on the show, mask up because what happens outside of school affects what happens in school. And we'll have to wait. And I think I'll be the one, as we're sitting having conversation, pushing us to make sure we're giving us enough time to see what Labor Day does to our environment. And I think the reason why our cases aren't as frequent in our schools is probably because we have the hybrid environment. You're not seeing students every single day together. You're seeing them on sporadic times in that high school, middle school. And you got parents on either side. Some are like, man, I really love it. And some are like, I really want my kid to be in full time. So you can't win with everyone in a situation like this. And that's what we've realized too as a board.
Are masks required in the Duval County schools? And, you know, we've been talking with Simone Green out of Washington, D.C., and they're running charter schools. And I would be interested in knowing if there's any difference between the two. They're both public schools, I understand, but.
Yeah. Yeah, we're definitely requiring masks for both the staff and the students that need to wear them. I think the big debate has been around like PE and music and recess because you have little kids running around and it's Florida, it's hot, and they're running around in the heat with the mask on. And we also want to make sure they're safe and not overheating and any of that. So it's like this, there's rules that we have in place, but you have to think about all the different things that a student does every single day. They got to eat, they got to run around a little bit. But it's mandatory right now that everyone's wearing masks. And that's also a heavily debated issue among staff and community as well. I'm sure listeners are probably have their own opinion about it as well.
Yeah. So I want to just ask Simone real quick, how is Friendship Public Charter addressing the sports activities, you know, and the electives for the kids? Are they still wearing the mask or do they take them off?
Right. From my understanding, the sports, they're still trying to figure that out. I know that whatever they do, there is a mask requirement in campus arrival. And as far as campus arrivals and departure protocols, to no touch temperature checks, classrooms are placed 6 feet apart. And then there's signages that are in our buildings that reinforce social distancing and in our administrative building throughout all of our campuses.
Okay.
All right. Wrap it up, Jarman.
All right. Well, we want to thank you, Simone Green, for joining us and sharing with us what Friendship Public Charter School is doing during this time. And also our special guest, Daryl Willie, we want to thank you as well for joining us as our education contributor to let us know what's going on in DCPS. So
always. Again, don't forget the half penny. Don't forget the half penny is coming up, too. Half penny sales tax before I got to make sure I make that plug each time.
Yes. And we are, again, we're reminding our listeners and everyone in the community to vote. Voting is the general election day to vote is November the 3rd, and it is steadily approaching. So make sure that you are registered to vote and you exercise your right to vote. The email address to reach out to us again is jacksempowermenthour@gmail.com. Send your comments, questions, and let us know if you're a small business owner that is still open. We thank you so much. Have a wonderful weekend. This is the Empowerment Hour on Praise 107.9.
Yeah, have a happy Labor Day weekend, everybody.
Peace.